much. It is 1:30, and this is going to be the first one and a half full length session, this one. So you're going to have to listen to us for the next hour and a half. But actually, we want to hear from you as much as we talk in this one, because there's a lot of history in what we're going to talk about now. There's a bunch of in-progress work that very few people know about, and then there's some future vision that we hopefully can talk about as well. And Fowler wants to stop scrolling around random code. That would be great.
Yeah.
Thank you. So how many people today write .NET class libraries? That's good, because you're all ASP.NET people. How many people have tried to get their .NET class library running in more than just ASP.NET? PCLs? Right, all PCLs, more hands went up. Okay. Who really loves the PCL ecosystem and the PCL tooling experience and the PCL? You are alone, sir. You are alone.
There's two.
.NET team put their hand up, but they don't count. I'm sorry, guys. One customer. Okay. So obviously .NET as a cross-platform platform, that was really badly phrased. .NET as a cross-platform thing, it has a long history, right? We're 15 years into this now, and as we've released more than just .NET running on Windows itself in the .NET framework, we've had to introduce techniques and technologies and guidance and all these things to allow you to have your .NET code be portable. We're going to use that word a lot, portable. What does it mean for .NET to be portable? So we want to introduce you to some new thinking today about some attempts on our side, as in the Microsoft side, collaboration between the ASP.NET team, the NuGet team, and the .NET team, to try and simplify how .NET works going forward with regards to cross-platform, and how that simplifies your job as class library authors on .NET. So that when someone says, hey, does your .NET code run on X, you can make an informed reason decision about that answer, okay? And you have an understanding of how what's involved to get your .NET code to run on X. And so with that, we would like to introduce you to this thing called
Generations.
Now, there is a history already. Like, people today, when they build .NET class libraries that run in more than one place, if you're lucky, you can just, you target one profile, one PCL profile.
And it happens to work.
And there's enough API in that profile for your library to work everywhere. Now, based on our quick analysis of some of the most popular packages on NuGet.org, that seems to be rarely the case. So it may work for your own libraries when you're sharing code across your own internal applications, but certainly for a lot of the larger libraries, that tends not to always be sufficient. You end up having to cross-compile. So you have a NuGet package that contains more than one assembly, where each assembly will be picked up by the infrastructure, by the compiler, and by VS and NuGet, with the appropriate assembly based on what target platform the actual end user is using. Windows Phone, WPF, ASP.NET 5, .NET Core, whatever it might be. Now, to author those things today, there's really been no tooling experience for doing that. You create assemblies by picking the appropriate platform. You may build a Windows Phone specific assembly, a .NET portable assembly, or one or two portable assemblies, depending on what you do, and then maybe another platform specific assembly like Net4.5 or Net4.6. And then you craft those into a NuGet package by way of manually authoring a new spec file. Who does that?
Hands
everywhere, okay. So you've probably, if you've played around with Xproj, and the experience that we built in the DNX project system, it supports cross-compilation as a first-class concern, and it supports outputting those to a NuGet package as a first-class concern. But that doesn't solve all the problems. It doesn't make it simple for us as Microsoft to introduce new places for .NET to run moving forward. You still have to think about, what APIs are available on that platform? Is that profile 285? Is that profile 11.6? I'm just throwing numbers out. They're probably right because there's so many of them. Is that a new platform they have to target explicitly? Wouldn't it be nice if there was a simpler way I could reason about where my code runs? And so that introduces us to Generations. So I will let Fowler walk you through this this markdown file.
So before I start, there are a bunch of terms and things that you haven't seen if you were just using the tooling before. I'm going to go past the tooling and dive into how things are actually done and implemented, what a term like contract means, reference assembly, implementation assembly, what a facade is. So there's a bunch of things that are that will be either new to you or you will have seen in passing. I'm going to try to explain because it really makes a difference when you understand how the thing came to be in the first place and why we are where we are today.
So we're doing the glossary up front.
Yeah.
This is the .NET glossary.
So today, PCLs have a profile number. You do file new project in VS. That's with 3D experience. You do file new project, and you click portable class library. And it gives you this dialog. And you pick a bunch of profiles for what you want to run on. And when you hit OK, magic happens. So if you look in the actual CS proj file, if you unload it and edit the project, you'll see this thing, profile 78. So the question was, how do you get from 78 to an actual NuGet package moniker? So there was this guy who like made this awesome tool that just has every combination for profile number, what it supports, and what to put in the actual package. We kind of didn't do that because we tried to hide it from people behind the scenes. There's actually a tool that actually created a bunch of random combinations of different profiles and created a unique profile number for each one of those combinations. So you have profile 5 to profile 344. And you weren't supposed to ever see these, but essentially this was your portable service area. So what they did was they took the area from .NET 4 and .NET on Windows 8 and combine them to create profile 5.
When you say the area, you mean the set of APIs.
APIs.
Right.
Yeah. And in Visual Studio, you actually got a single reference to a thing called, I think, .NET. So you never saw what actually you were referencing. So what happened was you would compile this, and the compiler would essentially create an assembly that had the things that you used. So if you open this guy in, let me open. ILSpy, because protector costs money. If you open up this class library, 89, look at the references. It has system runtime. That's all it has. All right. So this is kind of the thing that was hidden from you. You weren't supposed to see it ever. It was supposed to be portable, and it ran everywhere, and you were happy, right? Where things began to bleed was when you had to actually convert that set into a NuGet moniker. So the problem that ended up happening was you were a portable asset, but putting all the platforms in the NuGet package really made it platform specific. So what you had was a single binary that could run on two platforms. And if we added more platforms that supported those the same API sets, you couldn't run the NuGet package because NuGet had hard-coded knowledge of the specific platforms you compiled against. So the problem was you could have an actual thing that ran on brand new profiles like IoT or whatever we have today.
Right.
But burning the actual target frameworks into the package made it hard with that profile.
I also think it's worth noting that right-hand column, which I think a lot of people who hand author their new specs files when doing this type of coding, that leads me to believe that I can just tack on random pluses on there, right? And say, oh, well, now NuGet will load this assembly on this new platform that I put on the side there.
Right.
But as David just pointed out, of course it's not that simple. Like, NuGet has hard-coded knowledge of these combinations because they map over to what's in the left-hand column, you know, the truth of what's actually going on underneath the scenes. And I know for a fact there are people in this room who have tried tacking things on there. Things look like they work, and then you get runtime exceptions because things are missing. Because
right.
Things will get loaded because you put it in a folder, but you put an assembly in that we didn't guide you via an experience to put in the correct folder. So I guess it's fair to say this was a somewhat disjointed
yep.
experience in that we gave you a nice experience for producing
class
an
libraries.
Assembly, but we didn't really help you put it into a package, which is what we use for distribution.
Right.
Is there a question here?
Yeah.
Sometimes they would happen back, sometimes
they wouldn't. They're kind of arbitrary at this point. So the Xamarin profiles don't actually add service area. They're kind of just there to make NuGet work. And that's the issue with it. Because NuGet only sees things that have... So NuGet essentially matches the moniker in your project to the moniker in the package and has code that says, is this compatible? And if it is compatible, then it says, no, you're good to go. So even though the API service was working on Xamarin, it wouldn't work because NuGet would block it because of the hard-coded profile list in this pluses, right?
Right.
So PCLs were portable, like in theory, but in the package they were not portable. So you kind of lost the portability in the package itself.
Clint, so, do you have a question?
Yeah, we ship with more of a comment. So we ship portable class libraries for Xamarin as well. And I think one of the problems we saw was just that like the tooling makes it feel like it solves the problem for you, and it hides a lot of the details, but then you ultimately end up having to learn.
Yes.
Details.
In the package, yeah.
The comment for people who didn't hear was that, kind of just reiterating what we said, but from a customer's point of view, I guess, which is the tooling made it look like it was solving the problems for you and you not having to really care about what was going on in the scenes. But once you get into a certain level of complexity, which isn't too far from, I think, from the Hello World experience, you start having to learn or reverse engineer a lot of this stuff anyway, because frankly, we don't really have a good document that talks about this problem with NuGet and PCLs and other platforms and everything like end to end. So anyway, that's what the talk is about. So we've got some new ideas.
On purpose, because it was supposed to hide it from you, but this thing happened because people were pissed off and they were like, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's just do it ourselves because we aren't doing it.
I mean, the fact that we didn't create this, like someone in the community created this, I think speaks volumes about where we got to. So
super convenient. All right. I used it just now, actually, to make this document, actually. It's kind of terrible. So first, some terms. A platform, a hard platform, like .NET Framework, or Windows 8, Windows Store, those are platforms. Reference assembly. How many of you have know what this actually is? An assembly that isn't a real assembly. It's a fake assembly.
A reference assembly. Who's gone into that folder in program files, blah, 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 blah,
blah. It's like a header file for C Sharp.
Right.
Just for fun, I have to go show you it, because this is, if you don't know, you have to see it. Framework.
You could also call them compilation assemblies if you wanted to understand when they get used in the normal flow. You reference them, and they're used while you compile, but then they pretty much go away after that.
I think they don't have any code either, but I could be wrong.
They don't.
They don't, right?
They came about way before PCL.
Exactly.
Yes. Targeting. Yes. There's Silverlight and
they're still
Compact Framework. And
so it's how you can compile for lower versions of the framework without having it on your box. All you need is, for example, the version of System Core.
They also handily solved the problem of .NET Framework itself becoming mostly an in-place update platform. So as of .NET 4, we've only had in-place updates for .NET Framework on Windows. But with Visual Studio 2010, we introduced multi-targeting. So how can I compile a class library for .NET 4 if I'm running on Windows 7, which has, or Windows 8 that has .NET 4.5?
Yep.
This is how.
So there's no method bodies at all. It's just used for compilation. So there's pure surface area, and you don't actually have bodies. So you can't run it, but you can compile against it.
So that's a reference assembly.
Is that new to anyone? Anyone can do it.
They're just files on disk,
ultimately.
Not sure
you would want to do it.
and they get passed to the compiler like any other assembly to be as a reference. So, I mean, the C# compiler is pretty well documented.
It's a neat hack. I mean, it's a neat hack to actually just compile to get something that.
Right. All right, so that's reference assemblies. Yeah. Let's move on to the next.
All right, next one. Implementation assembly. I mean, so normally in .NET, these are merged into one thing. We do it differently at Microsoft. We have contracts and implementations that are kind of like interface implementations. But from an assembly point of view, so if you have System Core, the reference assembly, there's an equivalent System Core implementation assembly that actually gets used at runtime.
We should put aliases in this too, because I think the term contracts gets used a lot. You just used it.
Yeah.
A reference assembly is
a contract.
They're pretty much
the same
one for one. If you hear us talk about those, they're basically the same thing.
So this is kind of the worst definition I have in here. I can't find a better one, but a version set of reference assemblies across all platforms supported by the generation. It's kind of circular. It points to itself, so it's kind of weird.
A generation is a generation.
Yeah.
A generation.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
This is a new concept.
It'll make sense.
Don't be like, I understood the first three. I've heard of those. This is the new thing. This is what we're going to start talking about.
But it's a single moniker that represents, compilability across multiple profiles. And the NuGet moniker is not tied to a bunch of specific profiles. And that's kind of the key point. It isn't a hardcore list of, profile A, B, and C I target. I target this surface area, and my name is this. And then you can kind of go from there.
And we call that being open-ended.
Yeah.
So by definition, generations are open-ended, which basically means new platforms can appear that are supported by a generation that has already been released.
Right.
As opposed to a platform appearing today, and then that becomes a new checkbox in the PCL dialog.
Right.
So you have to change your PCL profile in order to get it to run on a new platform, generally.
And that was key because there was a platform explosion in .NET after Silverlight happened. Silverlight and then Compact Framework, or reverse order, and then Help Me Out .NET Team, and then like UWP, Silverlight Phone, Windows 8.1. So there's kind of this massive framework that came out. So the .NET team came up with this pattern for solving it, which was PCLs. So you had a bunch of small contracts that you could compile against, and then if those existed on those platforms, it would run. So the idea was very simple, but the question is, how does it manifest itself when you're actually targeting it in a package, right? So,
and just to finish that, the newest platform is obviously .NET Core. Now, unfortunately, .NET Core as a name is just terrible and kind of tainted right now. .NET Core, it's actually probably wrong to call .NET Core a platform. ASP.NET 5, when it runs on .NET Core, is a platform, right? It's something that runs your code, it uses the core CLR, and it needs libraries, it needs BCL bits designed to work on core CLR. That sort of collectively is .NET Core, but you'll see other slides, you'll see us talking, and Mark and a whole bunch of people talking about .NET Core as different things, or an umbrella term. It's probably easier to talk about .NET Core as an umbrella term with a bunch of technologies with a bridge to the existing .NET ecosystem. Okay, it's not necessarily a hard pivot or anything like that. But the short point of there is ASP.NET 5 is in effect a platform, but you're going to learn a little bit more over the next day or so about how we're making a slight adjustment to that platform piece in order to make it fit better into the existing .NET sort of ecosystem.
So since PCLs were around, that's kind of the beginning of .NET Core as a surface area pseudo platform. So think of it as if you were going to write a library that worked cross-platform and you have a PCL, it would probably just work. That's kind of the thought process. The problem is there was no way to say that it did work because there was no way to say that this thing works on platform that didn't exist yet. So the principles of generations are as a platform owner, so Mono, .NET Framework, .NET Core CLR, .NET Native must implement reference assemblies from one generation, one generation version line. There are multiple generations, so that's fine. You must pick API servers from one generation. You can't be jagged, and you'll see.
Let's drill into that just a little bit. So I want to interesting hop back to the where it says a generation is a version set of reference assemblies. If we think of the generation as a unit, it'll have a number like anything else. Let's call it version 6 for the sake of simplicity. Yep. Any given platform, as it says here, the owner of that platform must implement the reference assemblies that are contained in that generation version in order for them to state that they support running code that targets that generation. So if there's generation 6 and it has these 20 or 30 reference assemblies contained inside of it, API that I can code against, then in order for that platform, Damien's platform that comes along in order to support generation 6, I have to have implementations for those reference assemblies, right? Because the reference assemblies are just to compile against, implementations are to run against. And so as that generation version, 6.1, 6.2, 6.3, the old platform won't necessarily have all the API that's in 6.1 or 6.2, and so they can no longer say, well, I support 6.1, I support 6.0, but the generation itself, it's open-ended one way, but not necessarily the other, right? Does that make sense?
So you kind of have to show this.
You kind of have to show the thing. But if you think of a generation as having a set of API at a version, then obviously all the platforms that say they support that generation have to implement that API. If a new version of that generation comes out with more API, then the platform has to release a new version as well, okay, to support all the API in that generation. Although that's also a detail we'll get into later on.
In Android development,
APK, you can. In this model, the API set is every single thing we've ever shipped for any platform right now. So I can scroll down to just show you a glimpse of it. Like this, these APIs are everything we've ever shipped on any platform. So you can think of it as this is the core API set. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, I want to code against 5.1.
So thinking about, I'm targeting Xbox, I just say, do I need this functionality?
Correct.
Is this functionality available on Xbox?
Yes. Right. So if you need file system, you need to target 5.4. That's when it came in. So I'll jump around the thing because it makes more sense to seeing the versions and seeing what it means. And then things kind of make more sense in that point of view. So this is kind of a new one. Platform owners can implement a subset of the reference assemblies for a generation. So Damien just said, if there's a 6.0 and a platform comes out and it says, I support 6.0, I have to implement all of them. It's not true. You have to implement some of them. This is tricky because when you have new platforms that support less surface area, like if Raspberry Pi doesn't support WCF, for example, it may not have that contract. And you still want libraries that don't use WCF, that target that generation version, to run on that device or platform. So we'd like to implement a subset of the assemblies, and we have features that help you, that help library authors determine where they run based on a test, a hit test. So you can say, I'm on 5.1, but I want to run on, you know, .NET Framework 4.6, IoT, whatever. And NuGet will tell you, hey, it's 5.1, but it doesn't have this specific contract or assembly. So, you know, fix it or don't.
Well, and at that point, if we fast forward,
yeah,
we can envisage a tooling experience whereby when you hit that seam, so you say, I'm targeting 5.1, but I want to ensure I run on X, Y, and Z, and then you pull in a dependency from NuGet or a .NET dependency, and you use the API, the tools could tell you, because this is all codified within the rules of the system. It says, Hey, you want to use 5.1, but you also want to run on these three places. This little island here that you've tried to use won't work. What do you want to do? Here's how you can fix it. You can either bump your generation up to a point where you get all that API, but you may be losing some platforms, okay? Or perhaps that's the point where you have to cross-compile, okay? And the tooling could help you do that, define an extra target for you. Now you compile for 5.1 and 5.4, for example, and then you add if defs around that API call, et cetera, et cetera. Today, that's all completely manual. People do it, but they have to do it themselves.
Yeah, and the intent is that this wouldn't happen often, but if it does happen, there's a way to actually account for that.
Right.
Any change to the surface area of a generation causes it to version. So if there's an API change in XML or in
file
IO or
collections,
anything, there's a new version of generation. They're always browser compatible, which is good. So if you target 5.1 and you're in a 5.5 platform, you can actually run the 5.1, 5.4 to 5.1 enabled assemblies on your platform. So this is kind of a mapping of what we have today. So this is the generation. These are the platforms and their specific versions that are available right now. And it starts from .NET 4.5, unfortunately. So 4.0 and beyond and less than that are kind of like not in this pattern. You have to cross compile for those ones. But basically, you say, I want to support Windows Phone. You look here and you go, Windows Phone is Silverlight versus Windows Phone, not Silverlight. You can kind of see where you lie when you go down the actual columns. Any questions so far? Making sense? Not making sense?
Yeah, so do you think the version number of the .NET platform is going to be confusing for people who are, like, you're talking about .NET platform 5.5 and ASP.NET 5 and .NET 4.6?
Yeah.
Right? Yep. That is, I mean,
there's nothing you can do.
My knee-jerk response to that, not having thought about this at all, is that is one of the nature of the beast, given where .NET runs and how those platforms release and version independently. .NET, it's not a monolithic thing that only has one core with one version, and if you want to run that thing, you have to support all of it. Okay, we are a much more flexible platform, if you think of .NET as a platform rather than a CLR and a bunch of assemblies and a bunch of libraries, et cetera, that you can pick and choose when you build a platform. That has led us to the situation we're in now, where it can be a little difficult to reason about what API is on what platform and what can I call when I'm authoring a new library. And this is an effort to try and just bring that back slightly so that there is, as far as class library authors are concerned, there is one core version that I have to think about, which is the version of the generation, because that denotes the API that I want to call into, which then denotes where I can run.
There's a level of indirection, so you always have to have in your head, like, you know, 5.1 runs on blah, which is kind of unfortunate, but it is the reality of, like, the beast.
Yeah. And it's really the reality of where we've come from. Like,
yeah.
We started out as one thing, right? .NET Framework was the platform in 1999 and 2000, 2001, and we didn't really have any others. It was... It specified the BCL and the FCL. It specified what you could call. But then over time, we added new platforms, Compact Framework, and then Silverlight, et cetera, et cetera. We got that proliferation that David talked about. And frankly, you know, .NET wasn't really designed around that type of ecosystem at the beginning. And so we're having to, you know, retroactively fit these type of flexibilities into the platform as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Arbitrary starting point.
Yes, it is arbitrary.
If you're going to make it arbitrary,
You could, yeah. So absolutely,
12.0.
We can make this 10. We can make this whatever. Like,
we
could decide to completely reset.
We could do 101, but I don't know if we want to do that.
So anything that we decide doesn't matter, because ultimately it's not our call. Or it's marketing and .NET and us and NuGet and everyone all together. So this is just a working set of data, okay? Like, this is something just to talk about, but certainly that number could be anything. It is somewhat confusing to have it be one after the major .NET version that everyone knows, granted.
Yeah.
But I think it would be equally confusing to start it at 10. And it would confuse some people to start it at 1. So we have to trade off there. And we have a comment from the owner of .NET over here.
What's up, bro?
This is my first meeting. Right.
Before with PCL, it was intersection-based mechanics that followed all the Microsoft platforms. And so this idea is .NET Core leads the .NET with the APIs.
So I guess one other way to put that might be that rather than thinking about platforms where .NET runs, you think of .NET as the platform.
Yes.
And then various places where it runs support the .NET
platform. They implement .NET.
And the .NET platform versions with this, and we're taking this opportunity to reset. And then if new, you know, places that I can run .NET come along, like a watch or a refrigerator or, you know, next version of Xbox or whatever, then they have to adhere and get on the train of the .NET platform as opposed to the other way around. Right.
Which is more confusing, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, who can actually, in this audience, put up their hand and confidently explain what .NET Core is?
I thought I knew what it was at first.
That's one of the problems that we have right now in saying that, you know, .NET Core is the base. Like, well, what is .NET Core exactly? But hopefully, at the end of this talk, we'll be a little clearer. Yes?
Sorry, just some of the terminology here. I'm not sure if I'm missing something, but you're referring to those generations.
Yep. Yeah, so in terms of that, that's just, we're kicking around a bunch of different terms here. So the .NET platform as it's as a line there, that's just
that's the
text.
That's the name, well, that's our current name for what the generation moniker is.
A working title.
But it could be .NET with the platform part.
No, that's why.
Yeah, I see. This is kind of messed up.
It looks like a column header. It's not meant to be a column header.
I'm gonna blame someone else for this. It's not my paper. It's not mine.
It's not your chart.
It's under my GitHub account, but it's not mine.
So
I promise.
5.1, 5.2, 5.3. Those are the generations.
They're the generation versions. Yes. So exactly. Yeah. So the point was that those top column headings, the version numbers 5.1, 5.2, 5.3, they represent the .NET generation.
Right.
Versioning, so a different set of API. And as you can see, the earliest version, this is retroactively applying this principle to all the API that already exists
before.
In .NET.
Right.
So obviously the first one has the most API, right? As in it works in the most places, or the least API.
Least API, yeah.
It works in the most places.
Right.
Got that wrong way around, right? So the earliest one has the least API so that it's compatible with the most platforms. And then as we version it forward, again, retroactively, like we're rewinding 4 years and then going forward in time.
It's like browsers, right? This is like IE6.
Right.
Six.
That's a good point. If I write some JavaScript.
Edge.
Right, I write some JavaScript and I want it to run in browsers. You go to caniuse, right, .com. And the smaller set of JavaScript API I use, the more places that my JavaScript runs. And that's very similar to the concept of PCLs in general, but this is a pivot such that number is just ever increasing and the API gets bigger.
So is the intent then that in the tooling it will actually, and this is what you were alluding to before, but it'll actually say you can go here?
Yes.
Yes.
So you can imagine, once this is codified into NuGet and the rules that drive compilation and
the
rules that drive the project system and the class library templates and PCLs and Visual Studio and VS Code, once these things are hard and fast rules that are driven by your choices during file new and by the configuration of your project in Project JSON or whatever the file may be, then we can start to light up, and the selections of this box, for example.
You can imagine this being inverted?
Right.
And saying generation blot, and I target 5.1, and it says you run on these platforms.
So we can start building.
Imagine inverting it.
More, my vision is that this becomes a much more live, dynamic tooling experience rather than a once-up decision where I have to choose where I'm going to run and then it's fixed for the life of the project. So if you've used the experience in XProj where we give you combined IntelliSense for all the frameworks that you target in your project JSON, you can imagine something like that. But beyond that, even more, you could say, if you'd opted to say, and also make sure I stay within the confines of these concrete platforms, like, I don't know, .NET Core on Linux
Xbox.
Or whatever it might be, or whatever it might be, Xbox, then the tooling can still show API that's available in the generation you targeted, and then say, hey, you've used this API, you need to fix it. You need to form an action here because you're not going to be able to run everywhere you told us to.
Right.
But today, we can't build that tooling unless we codify these rules in a very concrete way. So that question right up the back.
Do you have an enlightenment story?
An enlightenment story? I mean, a light-up story? Or an enlightenment? What's that? So,
or Windows Phone,
I'm not sure I understand the question, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it still works the same way as before, I think. The difference is, instead of picking a portable with a bunch of different monikers, you pick the generation that has your actual, would that work?
Do you mean that you want to be able to a specific assembly that only works on the target platform?
He wants to implement a consistent service area with different implementations per platform.
Right, okay, yes.
So that's possible.
It is possible.
Added a bunch of mechanics and you get to make that happen. I can talk to you about it after. we added 10 NuGet features to make all this stuff work.
Basically, you want to do what the .NET libraries do.
So the .NET team actually does it today. I'll just show a glimpse of
how that works.
It kind of looks like.
Are you talking about cross-compiling right now, or something different?
No, something different.
You have to cross-compile, but you have one reference assembly, and you have multiple implementation assemblies.
So you compile against one, but then you run against many, depending
on
where you actually end up running.
System.runtime.
Like this is common for Xamarin, for example, if you want to take advantage of some platform-specific things.
In implementation, but not API. Correct.
So we added some NuGet folders in the latest version of NuGet. You guys can see. Oh god.
There you go.
I hate this monitor. Yeah. So there's lib, which is normally for your reference and for runtime. And there's a new one called ref, which is only for compilation. So instead of doing the lib portable A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you can just do ref platform, and that becomes your reference assembly. So you can say ref.net 5.3, use this, and then for implementation, you can have a bunch of different libs.
Right. So you could have ref with one folder, which
right?
is a generation,
exactly.
And then libs, which are all the specific
folders.
Platforms.
Right.
Hopefully you don't have to do that, but it is technically
possible.
It's
required in some cases when you need to light up behaviors out. Yeah.
Yes.
So current experience in Visual Studio is we do file new class library, we do file new portable class library.
Yes.
My
dream is that all the existing class library templates get killed and we have one. That's my dream. I don't know when, but my dream is that you create
long term, right? Short term, this PCL profile thing will be updated to support generation first, I think, instead of being platforms first. So there's two trains of thought. Do you compute the generation from platforms, or do you go vice versa and say, pick generation, and you figured out the actual, So we'll see. Yeah, me too.
It could also be a UI that lets you do either, right?
That would be.
Tell him.
Platforms.
Yeah, generations. And then show platforms as data. You show both.
You would show both.
You show both, but the pivot is what you pick, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I mean, and to be clear, like this part of the discussion is all a cloud above various people's heads right now.
Yeah.
But the point is, when we codify these rules, as I've said three times now, like all that becomes possible. And we really do want to make it so that we have a very rich class library authoring experience in Visual Studio that leads you down this path of having your stuff run everywhere in the best possible fashion while having to think about it at least, as little as possible while still understanding what's actually happening.
Say 5.2, and I
hit yep.
my library to target 5.2, it will automatically work.
Correct. So that's what we mean by open-ended. So today, those rules are actually, have noticed this, those rules are actually hard-coded into NuGet today. So when a new platform comes out, what happens? A new version of NuGet comes out.
I'll show you the code. I'm kidding.
That is the complete opposite of open-ended. What we want is that people can rev a platform and some metadata somewhere that handles, well, that platform runs with this generation and that generation is compatible with that platform. That can just be updated on the fly and you don't really have to know. All right.
Here's a user experience to test in the room based on that question. Can you go back to the other?
This?
No, not that. Your web page. Yep. That. So one idea is imagine we.
Oops.
No, that's not helping.
I was testing it.
Imagine we decided that like 5.3 was kind of the
default.
Mm-hmm. And so we went with the generation first, like you suggested, default 5.3, but we actually in IntelliSense list the APIs and then 5.4 and 5.5. It's like grayed out or something like that. So you know what you're missing, and then there's basically like a visual cue to say like, oh, I really do need that API, thank you for advertising. And you know, like, okay, I do want to pick that all upgrade to 5.4 or 5.5.
Good. I don't know whether you always necessarily know that you might need that API ahead of time.
Sure, but that's the whole point.
That's the whole point of the feature.
That's why you always see it.
So the point is you don't, since you're defaulted into 5.3, you don't have this API available to you.
Right.
So you haven't made the choice to use it, but it's advertised to you in the IntelliSense list grayed out. And then you basically realize that, oh, that might be the solution to the problem right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
yep.
Sounds good.
And if you make that choice, there's two or three different things the tooling could help you do if you want to use that API, which is kind of what we said at the beginning. It's like, do you now cross-compile and produce an assembly for 5.3 and 5.4? Do you up your base version 5.4. From 5.3 to 5.4, potentially dropping platforms. All these platforms in the 5.3 column that end in the 5.3 column at that point? Or, you know, something else. So we could build that tooling experience. And in my mind, I think that sounds like a wonderful thing to try. But obviously, you know, you're the audience, and you're the customers.
Does anyone want that experience?
So the intent, I guess, to paraphrase it, is if there was a tooling experience in Visual Studio when I built a class library, which was basically, I want to build a .NET class library, okay? And so you see new .NET class library. And then the first thing you choose is effectively one of the numbers at the top of this table. I want to target generation 5.1, 5.2, 5.3, 5.4, or 5.5. Let's say we default you to 5.3, middle of the road, because it's basically all the currently supported platforms. Okay, .NET 4.5.1 and 4.5.2, Windows Phone 8.1, all the other ones are older. You know, they're technically, kind of, most of them are out of support. And so we default you to 5.3, and then you start typing code, and you get IntelliSense for the APIs in 5.3. But also, interleaved in the IntelliSense, you get other APIs showing up, but with a glyph, or they're grayed out, to indicate that they're beyond generation 5.3, maybe even has 5.4 next to it and 5.5. And if you choose that, you get a green squiggly. And it says, well, when you go to, you'll get a compile warning, it says, or an error probably, and it says, you can't use this API because it's outside of the baseline, the generation that you've chosen. How do you want to fix it? Do you want to now produce two assemblies, one for 5.3 and one for 5.4? And we'd automatically ifdef around that code for you to get you started, update your project JSON file, your config file to get you going. Or you could just say, no, I'm ready to move to 5.4. Please just bump my baseline up to 5.4, and then the error goes away. That's the type of experience that we're kind of spitballing at the moment to help .NET class library authors have their code run in more places. Does that sound good? Okay, that was like four people, but that's good.
Can I clap?
More important than what will I get if I move up to this higher generation is
what will I lose? Correct.
If I move up to this
higher.
Absolutely.
That if I'm 5.3, I know, well, you're not going to support Silverlight.
Yep. Yep, and you can certainly imagine a UI with this like literally a list of supported platforms and unsupported, and you move it, and you see them like move from side to side. It's like, oh, okay, that one's died, right? So we can certainly, we can do all that type of stuff. Yes.
So all this is really interesting, but as a library author, I still don't have insight into what I should or shouldn't be supporting in the first place. As in, how many people are still using...
Yeah, that's a great question.
...platform this, or can I move on? Mm-hmm.
Right. There's really no magic data. So the observation was that while this is wonderful about telling me where API is available and letting me build stuff that runs on various platforms, you still as a customer, I mean, you as a producer of libraries, you have to make the decision about when it's right to drop support for a platform. When I am no longer going to produce my package with an assembly that runs on Silverlight 5 or Windows Phone Silverlight 8.1.
Or NetTool.
I'm not saying there's nothing Microsoft can do to help you there. Obviously, what is currently considered a supported platform is one of the data points into that. And then what I would do personally is go and look at the top 10 or 20 so NuGet packages on the feed, and then look at what they've done as well, like learn from others. So if James has already dropped Windows Phone Silverlight, I have no idea if he does, I'm just going to pick him on him because he's right there, as MrJason.net, that would be a pretty good indicator to me. He's like, well, if it's good enough for James, it's good enough for me.
What would James do?
What would James do? Oh, we could register
that. We could
that.
Be that thing.
What would JamesKingDo.com? Anyway, if you think there are other data points that we as Microsoft should be providing to you to help you make that decision, by all means, please suggest them and we'll see what we can do. That's one for Richard's team. That's a good one.
Oren.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Data is there. Windows Update goes from numbers and there's swim in. But somehow that can be exposed to us. That would be very helpful.
Yeah, Rich. Expose it.
Actually, you'd be surprised. I agree with you.
So here's a question, great suggestion from someone here. Yes, I will. So the point is about how can Microsoft provide you more data, right? About helping you decide when to drop a certain platform or not. NuGet as an ecosystem, including the clients that run in Visual Studio all the way through to the server, has pretty much the best source of data for this. Like when I install Newtonsoft.json into a project in Visual Studio, it knows which project type it went and which assembly out of that NuGet package got selected. So it's feasible that we could produce some very rich data that shows you for the top whatever packages or even the entire NuGet system.
Most popular frameworks.
What are the most popular .NET frameworks? And yeah. What are the top 10 or top
Net 4, 5?
You know what I mean? I have no idea if we're legally allowed to do that type of aggregate data based on the current privacy policy.
How many people actually click yes to that little box that says Microsoft data?
Who ticks yes on the customer experience improvement program?
I agree.
In Visual Studio.
I agree.
You are part of the solution, people. Well done.
I think it's very high for 2015.
Very high for 2015. That's something we should investigate. That sounds like a really good idea. Glenn, sorry, I saw him first.
Yeah, I just want to push on again, a little bit further. Like, I was talking about this actual thing of IntelliSense, but having that up-level experience where I can say, here's my project, and where it's predictive. Like, I haven't actually made any change.
Right.
I just want to
see
what is going to be the impact across this project.
Yes.
If I move, this package is not just my local DLL references, but also,
potential references.
Well, so imagine you reference another package. So the comment again was you want to be very clear when you make a decision about what assemblies you're producing, what generations you're targeting, you want to be informed. You want to know what platforms are you losing. So say you're in IntelliSense and you say, oh yeah, I want that API, let me go up to 5.4. That wouldn't be a control.enter experience. I imagine that would be a modal experience if you invoke that. And then you would get the same API that you'd got at the beginning of File New, where you see, if I go to 5.4, oh look, three platforms jumped out of the supported list into the unsupported list. And so, okay, maybe I don't want to do that. Let me pick the cross-compile option instead so I can keep those platforms, but I may have to do a little bit more work now because I have to think about how I'm going to implement this feature on this system where that API isn't available, et cetera. Okay? Does that resonate with people?
Yeah.
Dead silence.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Any more questions before we continue and talk a little bit more about this? Sorry, right at the front here.
Are you trying to say that the numbering 5.1 to 5.5, is it got to do more from the tooling perspective, or is it got to do that, you want to replace that dialogue that said, hey, PS4 or whatever it is, and then bring in a new set of way of creating class
labels? It's not new, it's inverted. You pick the generation, and that tells you where you run. So you target a generic version number that increases forever, and that tells you where you can run or not run based on that number.
So that Glenn said, so there's a new version of a platform coming in, so you're going to handle...
Yes,
yes,
yes.
That whatever...
Yep. Yes. Correct. So as curators of the .NET platform in Microsoft, if a new platform does appear and it states that its generation is 5.3 that it runs on, we would then have to update. Now, the thing, as I mentioned before, is that today that takes a new version of NuGet to do that. The intent is that would be somewhat more dynamic. That file would live on a web server somewhere or on NuGet itself in a package, for example, so it can be easily updated.
But the benefit is a class library that targets .NET as the moniker never has to change any tooling, because that's understood by NuGet, right? I understand.
Will we still continue as a QCL, or is it going to be a new...
So
there is a short-term plan here, and a medium-term, and a long-term, and there is decreasing visibility and clarity as we look out. I can give you an opinion. So David can give you an opinion.
So we'll show you the future plans that we want.
This
is the interim plan, and this is still PCL. This is it's like PCL V4 at this point. It is a tweak on the PCL, pretty
it's
much.
Kind of collapsing profiles into a smaller set.
It's
all right?
A tweak.
But this is what the future is. Like, okay, we're going to go into the generation level and then forget. Well, whenever I'm creating as a library,
correct.
Look at
generations first.
Correct. That is the intent, is that you would think about what generation I want because of what API I'd like. And then obviously as part of that, you need to decide what platforms do I get when I do when I use that generation. Yes?
Just to quickly go back to the comment about picking generations first or...
Yep.
We really have already done it, because when we talk about building PCLs, we talk about building a 259. Or
yeah, exactly.
I mean, you guys have reverse engineered that anyway.
This
right?
Awesome.
That's the only way that we can.
It's the best thing ever.
And partly is because of the explosion on the right-hand side there. The combinatory effects of this are mind-boggling, right?
This was a for loop, and this was loop 259.
Okay. Yes.
The question is,
so the question is basically, how do we build an experience, or are we planning to build an experience to work with existing code bases that are already running on more than one .NET platform, or maybe not? And then as a result of that code base I have, tell me or help migrate me to a world where generations is. Now, the answer to that is, is it's a little nuanced. Sometimes you don't need to. Like, if you're already running in all the places you want, everything you have now works. Now, obviously, there may be a situation where you want to take a class library that you have right now with 5 years of investment in it, and you decide, I want that to run on .NET Core. There's a great example, because everyone, hopefully, is doing that thought exercise right now. It's like, how do I make my crap run on Linux? Right? To do that, I need to run on .NET Core. And so how do I figure out what I should choose? Yeah, that should probably be part of the experience somehow.
If you have PCLs, you're halfway there. So if today you have a PCL already, that targets profile 7 or blah, or whatever you target.
11.
Yeah, you are halfway there to being running on cross-platform. The next step is this. This is what's stopping you from not running cross-platform today. This is the last mile.
We hope.
It is.
For the next 10 years.
You said that's half.
This is the half, last mile,
that's
next
a,
half.
That's a long
What if you don't want to target a specific .NET platform version, you want to actually go out and specify your dependencies, the smallest set of your dependencies, like you want to reference...
Then you're crazy. Then you're crazy. You can do that, you can target 5.1, and then put all the specific versions of individual
things. So the question was, for the people who didn't hear, what if I don't want to think about a nice round atomic unit number, I'm paraphrasing a little here, and I am a master of my own domain, and I want full control over every single dependency that I know about, and I want the job of figuring out what version of what dependency runs on what platform. I want to take control. You can do that. You can just target the lowest possible generation and then pick your dependencies individually, and it'll run wherever you crafted it to run completely manually. And you can just completely askew this entire universe that we're building and just do it manually and do it manually in new spec and do it all yourself.
And we'll hit you for it.
And yeah, as a team who has lived that for the last 2 years, that's effectively what we've tried to do. It's not fun work. I mean, we're doing one package is, you know, but when we have to do hundreds of packages, it's not a lot of fun.
I'll be transparent. At this point, we kind of don't know what the name. We put stars in and just kind of cross our fingers and hope for the best. Because we kind of lost track of like which individual packages are compatible with each other. So we kind of just like say, well, star, hopefully they're all current.
All right, let's keep it. Let's see if we can move on to the next topic, because there's more to talk about. But of course, we'll answer questions as we go.
So PCLs, this is brand new. This is last night. This is good. So if you have a PCL today, you basically look in your project for that moniker. Ugh, no, BitLocker.
Just do Lou's trick.
No, hold on. Boom. Dead. All right. Dead. So, unload project.
Anyone from MSIT here?
Edit. This number is what you look at, and then you go, okay, 78. 78 is here. I can put this in my package.
5.1.
This is how you migrate from today's PCL to .NET Core compatible cross-platform, Super Magic cross-platform library that runs on Linux and Mac and OS X and Debian and...
I like that better than .NET Core.
DOTNET is the official name, but the moniker and the versions are. It's not confusing at all. It's .NET.
Did you take that library or the binary and put it in all those other various?
No. So the question is, do I take that binary and then put it in a folder for 5.1 and 5.2 and 5.3?
No.
So if you have a NuGet package right now that has two lib folders, one that's profile 78 and one that's profile 259, you can now collapse that into a single generation folder, 5.1.
Right.
Right? That's what this table is showing.
The only reason you may have had two PCL was because you had two different API sets that you were targeting.
Right.
If you want to keep doing that, you can
still
do
that, obviously.
If you don't want, you can collapse into one if you want to. Yeah.
So there's a difference between, I guess, the API you're calling for your implementation versus the API you're exposing and the types and the light up and those type of things, right? You still have to make those decisions as a class library author whether you need more than one assembly.
Right. So everyone has to do this right now. So get your computers and start.
Has anyone noticed that ASP.NET 5 packages have already started this transition? So you may have noticed as part of the RC work right now. In fact, did we do it in 8?
Yes.
Beta 8?
In RC1.
RC1. We changed our own libraries. Do you want to bring up one of our project JSON files? Look at the change. So for example, MVC6, if we go and have a look at the project JSON files in MVC6, we've made this change. NuGet already support, well, DNU already supports
both
this?
Both NuGet and DNU.
Oh, there you go, already.
So, I made a mistake. We support some of it. I did this last night, so NuGet will support it like soon. Where's Yishai? Yishai, right? He's adding code for it right now. So the next version of NuGet.
But that said, if you go and look at our MVC project JSON, so here's the frameworks that we're compiling for now. MVC, the assembly in MVC6, compiles for .NET 4.5.1. Plain old, this used to be DNX 4.5.1.
Yeah, and DNX Core 50.
And it used to be DNX Core 50. That's gone.
So the intent is that class libraries are target the generic surface area. They don't target specific platforms unless they have to.
Yep. James.
So right now with the project.json, we're listing dozens of dependencies with lots of different version numbers.
Oh, yeah.
How will that work with this .NET?
So excellent question.
That leads into the next part of this talk, actually.
Like with portable class libraries, you had just .NET
in that reference.
Correct.
So we have to bring that back.
So we have a plan for that.
Yeah,
right?
The current thinking. So Oren has a tool.
The question was today, like in JSON.NET in your project JSON file, you have to reference a whole bunch of different dependencies, right? Basically, what this gentleman over here wanted to do, right? And rather than just being able to say this is for profile 44, and you just get those dependencies automatically. You have to list out all the various things that you actually call and handcraft those. So can generations solve that somehow? So we do have a second idea that kind of tacks onto that that does address that. I don't know if you want to talk about that right now. We've got 34 minutes.
So the only same way to do it for porting is there's a tool that Oren wrote with the help from a guy called Eric St. John that takes your assembly references and turns them into, I have an example actually of porting an application, porting JSON.NET, from current PCL world to new .NET based world. And I have to do here, dependencies.
Right, so that's as it is right now. Yeah. That would work today. Yeah. But we have a further idea beyond that.
Yeah. So
to make this better.
So two things, right? The first thing is, it is now safe to target the highest version of all the individual packages, and you'll be safe because the generation gives you a flat line of a flat baseline where APIs won't rev. So if you said I target system console star, you're fine. That works just fine. But figuring out where APIs are is painful. That's why Glenn built this tool called Package Search. So if you guys have seen this tool, you say, I want to do file dot. Does this thing work, Glenn? Is it busted?
You know, you have to press enter and make a search.
Jesus. What's it doing?
He did.
Right now, what's happening?
What?
You're waiting for Azure websites to spin up the site again. That's what you're waiting for.
So this is terrible, yeah. Glenn. Is that ASP.NET 5? Can't be.
It is, but it's like beta 5.
Oh, that's why.
It's frozen Chrome. All right, so you search for the API you want, and it tells you which package to get. We want to build an experience where you target a meta package, which is a package of a bunch of dependencies, and we essentially trim your dependencies and give you what you used, kind of like the compiler does for you on your behalf. So that's what we're thinking of as an alternative. For porting your current class libraries, I think Oren's tool can be used to point at an assembly, maybe, and it will generate a new spec that has a bunch of references. That's ideal, I think. So you say, point this PCL 259 thing to a generation, and then compute the dependencies that were used as NuGet packages instead of assembly references, and then you're done. So it'd be trivial.
So the question was about Visual Studio 2013 and
so
support there.
I'm going to just say things, and then people hopefully react and code them. So I think to make this thing work well, it needs to go back to 2013 as well. So essentially, you should be able to replace all portable dashboards. Well, not 4.0. This is kind of an elephant in the room that I won't talk about, unless you ask me a lot. But the Net 4.5-based PCLs that we are supporting, this should replace all those completely. So you should never have to have this ever again. I know, it's great. Yeah.
How are you going to, the version number and the generation number of the .NET framework,
mm-hmm.
Once .NET is 5.0.
What do you mean by .NET 5.0? Seriously, what do you mean? When you say when .NET is 5.0, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
When .NET in Windows goes 5.0?
Yeah.
Like.
Are you saying there's a conflict? Because one of them is .NET.
And one is .NET. It's not confusing. Like, it's super obvious. You didn't see that? .NET framework. .NET 5.5.NET. It's like, you can't even screw it up.
And we have .NET Core, which is a different number again. In case you didn't, you know.
.NET Core is not .NET Core, the new one. It's the old .NET Core. Yeah.
And then we add the generations to.
No, so like this is super simple. You pick a table and you're done, right? Once you have this, you're like. Yeah.
So if it wasn't clear, this talk is a little mix of stuff that we've talked about or may have done in public and some other stuff that is obviously brand new.
Yeah.
So just be mindful when you start thinking about and talking about this stuff. To answer that question specifically, I'll go completely NDA right now.
Yeah.
When was the last time we did a cross-platform .NET, side-by-side install of .NET on Windows? 2010. End of 2010, beginning of 2011. I wouldn't be holding my breath for a .NET 5 on Windows. If you hadn't gotten that by now, then there's a reason we're doing this work and .NET is doing what it's doing and we're doing what we're doing to make it run everywhere. .NET framework as it is a part of Windows. It is a Windows platform piece. Okay, it is the .NET that ships in Windows, hence it is going nowhere. All right, that thing is going to be in Windows forever. As long as Windows exists, .NET framework will be in it. But we're limited because it's such a mature and regimented and very curated sort of platform. We're very limited in what we can do in there. Okay, and so that's why we ASP.NET 5 is out of band, NuGet, cross-platform, all those sort of things. Yep. All right, are you going to talk about this second tab?
Soon.
Okay, because so we've got 29 minutes.
Authoring guardrails. So
guardrails.
It's a feature, and does anyone use the UWP tooling support in VS 2015? Anyone written the UWP class library? One, two.
So you. The .NET team has done it. Yes.
One person that's not from Microsoft. Huh. That's gonna be tough. Yeah, that's him. He's.
Put his hand up.
So we spoke about platforms that don't support specific reference assemblies or packages. So in this example, there's a new platform called .NET Banana 1.0 that doesn't support this specific package. So what NuGet does is NuGet has this thing called supports, which maps an arbitrary name to a specific target framework and a bunch of other things I won't explain. But in the end, what you get is an error that says, you target this specific API, but Banana does not support that API. So you have two choices, like Damien was saying. You can either cross-compile and migrate your thing to a specific dependency in that framework and then say, I'm targeting Banana specifically, and I can work around that issue by ifdefing. Or you just don't support Banana, and you remove from the list.
Right.
So you kind of get two pivots.
Or drop down a generation, possibly.
Yeah. Or go back in time, or whatever. So you can have options where if you happen to be in the set that Banana supports, you're good anyway. So
how likely is this? Because there's a couple. We're just going to talk for a bit. You can listen. So there's a couple of platforms where retroactively versioned all the .NET generations back to everything that exists today. I think the ideal world is that moving forward, new .NET platforms support all the API in a given generation.
Yep.
But obviously, we built the support for a reason. How many of these landmines kind of exist in the existing mapping that we've done? So of that. If I pick generation 5.3 and then I run on Windows Phone, is anything
missing? It should be rare, very rare.
It's pretty rare, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about the holy shit backdoor. Can I say shit? I don't even know. Holy.
Say it twice.
Holy something backdoor, where like just in case this platform couldn't support it because it's on a super tiny device. Refimit, for example, doesn't work in AOT scenarios. For example,
or store.
Or store. Yeah. So for example, yeah.
So it is very much the exception.
It's possible, but it's on the edges.
It's very much the exception.
Fringe, yeah.
We don't expect this to happen, but we need to allow for it when it does happen. The design is there. We can build tooling for it. All that good stuff feeds in.
What happens when you don't put the version number on the end? You have just .NET as the moniker.
I think you create a singularity, and the entire universe collapses in on itself.
You should not.
And we all move to Java.
You should.
A lot of the V8 libraries came that way?
Yes.
Yes.
They did.
Yes. That is
a precursor to this work.
A precursor that was before we did this.
Okay.
Right.
Means, so specify the minimum intersection of your.
That. Yes. Exactly.
So you manage everything super carefully.
Yes.
And you don't get any of the kind of.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
As long as you understand, pretty much.
Yeah. Yes. If you understand that, then effectively what it maps to in this world from a reasoning, like a matching point of view, is the earliest generation.
Right.
You're kind of saying I am an assembly that runs everywhere. And you're going to figure that out based on what I explicitly say I depend on. That's actually gotten easier since the packages now contain
specific
implementations for the right generations moving forward.
So you would put a reference to your specific versions of the stuff that you...
Correct. Which is easier now. Okay. You can just say the latest now.
So the reason that it's so hard is because it's taking this picture, this table,
right,
where you have a number and an X in each column. You pivot, instead of pivoting on a bunch of assemblies, you pivot on each one. So each version of each assembly tells you where you run.
Those versions aren't even in this table.
Exactly. So right? I don't have the version of Microsoft C# that runs on 5.1, but imagine there were four versions of this guy that ran on each individual generation. That's your math. So once you figure that out, you can specify individual dependency versions of each one.
Imagine there was a third dimension to this table, which was the individual versions for every contract.
Right.
And then the results in the generation tables were different per version.
Right.
Then you had to pick which one you wanted to run on in order to, like, which version of every single contract to pick in order to run on the target platforms you wanted to run on.
Right.
Okay? Generations is a simpler way of achieving the same thing, but just saying, I want to run on 5.3 and everywhere that runs.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
All right. This is where we are today. And this table is great because you can just say I target 5.4 runs. And by the way, like before .NET Core came about, we had a lot of APIs that were missing. So for example, System Console is not there on generation 5.1, 5.2, or 5.3. It's only at 5.4. 5.4's min version of .NET is .NET 4.6. So for example, if you want support, if you want .NET support for 4.5, and you want System Console, you're gonna have to cross compile for .NET 4.5 and for generation 5.4.
Or two generations.
Yeah. So this is these are the portable service area, the one that runs everywhere. If you want to use specific APIs in like .NET 4.5, you have to cross compile to that specific platform. If you want like call context
or WPF,
or if you want WinForms, those guys do not play in this game. That is platform specific APIs.
Right. Does that make sense? Everyone gets that, right? If you want to call an API that only exists in that platform, you've got to compile explicitly for that platform. Okay, that's pretty logical, but it's worth pointing out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can try and do tricks with reflection light up, but you know,
don't.
But you know, you can, but don't.
Yeah.
But you could. All right.
So, all right. This is where we are today. Where we want to go in the future is this thing. Should I have to zoom in again? So what you saw was a calculation based on what we had already. This is supposed to be, imagine we didn't have anything ever and we want to start from scratch. How would you design a system where you had a tiny core and a bunch of pure packages on top that were IL that you could just swap out via NuGet packages, right?
You need to explain
what
a pure package with IL.
So the dream,
more
right?
Terms.
The dream is that the core of .NET is tiny. There's like OS specific things, like let me just go to the picture because it's better. The picture is, you know, layer zero is platform specific stuff, so file system, sockets, CLI intrinsics, like, you know, int string, those things. And those guys vary per CLI implementation. So Mono has their own. We have our own for .NET Framework. We have one for Core CLR. And then you get reference assemblies that kind of are the API shape for the underlying implementations. So these guys are kind of like pinvokes, right? And this guy is kind of the layer on top, like file IO, on top of the pinvokes. And then once you have that tiny core, you can build anything you want on top of that core. So basically, the layer two becomes bigger. So we take a bunch of stuff that we have kind of in the framework, like XML is kind of baked into the actual layer zero in the previous picture. Everything that is in this box right now is in layer zero, and it shouldn't be. Mono should not have to implement their own version of XML or WCF or Link, for example, right? These guys can be done in pure C#, pure IL, without any pinvokes into the platform. So the dream is, can we have this beautiful system that is like tiny core and stuff on top that tiny core?
So that's actually a good point. So what another way of saying that is,
yeah.
Layer zero isn't portable. Those
Correct.
Are platform specific. Layer one in this model is intended to be portable. That is, you code against layer one, you have a layer one, you have a version of layer one. It runs everywhere that layer zero is implemented.
Right.
Does that make sense? So layer zero isn't portable. You have one on your watch, you have a different implementation of it on a Mac, you have a different implementation of it on Linux, and one on .NET Core on Windows. And then layer one around that just calls into those APIs by way of either reference assemblies.
Right.
Or just normal NuGet packages that contain IL. Doesn't mean that those NuGet packages in this standard library bit here, they're still free to do platform-specific optimizations, but they must run everywhere that there is a layer zero implementation. They can't only be platform specific.
Right.
Does that make sense? So this is a further realization. This is like taking the concept of generations to the next level and just saying, how do we define the core set of .NET APIs that runs anywhere .NET runs forevermore?
You shrink it, right? You shrink the generation to layer zero. So as long as the people that own the platforms port to wherever you run, .NET then runs everywhere.
Using old terminology, would that be fair to say you're making the standard with packages PCL?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they are plain IL with, if you were to look in those packages, it'd be a lib folder with a generation, DOT, NET, 5.
Blah.
Blah, right?
Yep.
And they could have more than one, right? Because they may do different things.
The big question is, when does that thing version?
Right.
Today it versions when any of these things change. If WCF changes, the version you get a new generation. In this model, That number only changes when layer zero changes, meaning like file IO or socket. So if those don't rev often, you have kind of a core that's stable, and then a bunch of packages that just are on top of that core. So you never have to pivot on the actual like bigger
API surface. I guess the idea here is that the smaller you make that core, the thing that defines when that generation number ticks over another version, the less times you have to think about, right, what platform am I losing if I jump up a generation? Because if that thing only changes very rarely because it's so core and intrinsic, then that just becomes less of a problem. Like the things that you're referring to are almost exclusively in layer one. Those are the APIs that you'll actually be calling, and they are designed to be portable. They run everywhere by design.
As an example, if you use XDocument, that only came into the portable service area in 5.4. Which is kind of crazy, right? Like, if you want to use XDocument APIs, you have to use generation 5.4.
XML but, document. Yeah.
But in theory, that thing is just a package that has IL inside of it, right? It doesn't ping invoke into anything. It's XML, right? It's a parser. So in theory, like in this model, XML ends up being a package that you depend on that is just IL that you can update. Like, IMRs everywhere.
It's the realization of us saying that .NET just becomes a bunch of packages. Okay. Well, right. Most of the API that you use would just become a bunch of packages, so then they've just version by themselves, right? You don't have to worry about where they run anymore. The thing that pivots where something will run becomes this very small set of APIs at the core that are platform specific.
Right.
Well, platform specific implementations.
Yeah.
The API is fixed and versions over time.
Orin.
Great question. So the question is, from a NuGet authoring point of view, in this world where we imagine we have a thing called the .NET Standard Library, is it still assumed that you have to still individually reference all the actual APIs contained in layer one? Say layer one has 100 APIs. Does the NuGet package or the author have to reference the 47 APIs they use, or can they just reference layer one version 5? Is that what you mean?
Okay, let's talk about the interim first. In the interim world, yes, because you want the case where like Banana does not support specific API. If you happen to be in that API set that doesn't use that on Banana, where it supports the stuff, you shouldn't have to worry about it not running, right? So it's not as big as a profile where you have a bunch of pre-built assumptions in the box. You have to still list individual dependencies, so you can be portable. Yeah.
In the standard library vision, you would not have to worry about that necessarily as a library author. You would reference a single unit, the .NET standard library version X.
The package still has individual references, though.
Right?
For the same reason.
From the library's author's yes. point of view.
Yes.
There's a distinction here, and
yep.
Fowler alluded to it before. You reference an atomic unit, and you get a bunch of API. When you compile and create a NuGet package, what you get out is something that references what it used. We trim on the way out.
So as an example,
okay.
This is kind of just a made-up thing. So we're thinking that this guy actually implies this package reference of the same version to start with. And if you want to bump this guy on top of the version under here, you just say it in dependencies list. So you say, I depend on 5.5.1, and you'd get a bunch of API service from that generation. Versioning here, the mapping from generation to standard library, this is kind of layer zero, so the major and minor of this guy matches the major and minor of the generation, and these are updates to the packages inside of the actual
standard library.
Library.
So yes, this is not SEMVER. We are restricted by the fact that we're trying to version two things that are tightly joined together,
yeah.
Unfortunately, and we only have so many numbers to work with. So as Fowler said, .NET 5.5 represents layer zero. And so that would version as anything in layer zero changes, any API surface changes.
Right.
Okay. System.standardlib includes the reference assemblies to call those things, but also any other arbitrary API that we determine as being a good part of .NET, the core standard library. Those are free to add new API and you know whatever it might be on that third number, because it doesn't introduce a dependency on new API in the lower layer, layer zero.
Right.
So if I have a type called Damien's great thing in .NET standard library 5.5.0, and then I want to add a new method to it, I can just do that in 5.5.1 if that method just calls into a different overload that was already there. Okay, because it's just pure IL. nothing changes, and it's just on NuGet, so anyone can use it. Anywhere that runs .NET 5.5 will happily pull in the 5.5.1 package and will run that code. So it actually gives us that NuGet-based flexibility and portability of the .NET packages themselves that we're kind of striving for. And as Fowler said, the idea would be from a tooling point of view, you would imply a version of that standard library based on the generation. So if you just say, I'm targeting generation 5.5, we'll just give you standard library 5.5 by default. And if you want to tick it up beyond that, you can say, well, I need 5.5.2 or 5.5.3 because I know that has new API in it that isn't encapsulated by just the generation number. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank
you. Good.
Any thoughts on this? This whole thing, is it crazy?
And to be very clear, this is this concept is somewhat nebulous right now. It's pretty,
oh, yeah.
This is very early.
It's new.
And we're still figuring out a lot of details, but we wanted to share this with you. And this is very NDA right now. but we wanted to share this with you because we think it's important to get feedback here and see if this is actually going to solve some of the problems that we want. And we're going to have a talk later on today that will dive into some other things related to this or platforms on this. Great question.
So,
what's the ballpark time frame for this?
This one is happening as we speak.
The first one.
The first one. We support this already in NuGet and in DNU. We're going to add this support for it, and then we have to figure out how to get it into VS2013, and how we change the tooling for PCLs to support generations, and that's kind of the short-term plan to support current people targeting.
What do you mean by short-term? They're asked for a ballpark. Next 6 months? Next 12 months?
Less than 6 months.
Yes. What's RC2, Richard?
Yes.
Mars. We haven't talked about that just yet.
Sometime.
But we will.
Yeah. Short term.
Yeah, guys, RC2 is March.
Yeah.
Short term.
No, RC2 is earlier than March. Oh, okay. RTM is March, friend. Yes.
So ideally, we'd have the most popular packages like already on board, James, and other people, to actually do this. So we're
going to... Well, hang on. Let's split it up, though. So like, there's short-term, there's a little bit longer short-term, and then there's a little bit longer again. Short-term, NuGet will support all this very soon. Like, if it doesn't already support this whole document, it will very soon. In terms of having a tooling experience, like a class library experience that supports this, that's a little bit longer. And I would hope that's still first half next year.
Update 2, I guess.
Yeah. Yep, I'm getting nods from the .NET team, and probably, you know, VS Update 2 or some, I don't know, something like that. But first half of next year, okay? In line with our RTM.
Yeah.
Sometime around that time. The standard library
this
work.
This one is.
We don't know yet.
We'll talk about the problems and the challenges with this, with just doing this right now, and the reality of like what we have today. So I spoke about this beautiful ideal world and all these contracts and portable service area. So I had this definition for something up here that is a. Facade assembly. Does anyone know what this is?
.NET team, okay, you don't count.
You don't count either. Two people know. So this is kind of horrible to explain, but it's the reality of what we have right now. So even though something comes in a package, it doesn't mean that it's really a package. Crazy. So the implementation of some packages actually type forward. People know what type forwarding is? Who knows what type forwarding is? If you don't, I'll show you. But you know, you sure you know?
You generally don't use type forwarding when you're doing app development.
Ah, crap.
It's just pretty rare.
I have to show it.
You should get a Surface Book. They're twice as fast as the
MacBook. It's not plugged in. Okay. So facade is something that type forwards into, not MS Corelib, but it type forwards to some assembly. I have to change that, actually. Let me just fix it. This is an amazing spec library. I'm so proud of it. Another. Oh, that's an example, actually. I'll leave that. That was right. So an example is system runtime. So that specific assembly, if you update the version, you can't really change the bits outside of what you're actually type forwarding to. So the assembly is kind of, the package is there just for convenience, but you can't actually update stuff.
Because it's delivered via a different mechanism. Right. The actual implementation is being delivered by, for example, .NET Framework in Windows. We can't just push a new thing to NuGet.
The reason it's important is because we need types like object and string to come from the same place. So for example, XML exists on .NET framework, right? If you have an X document and you compile against a portable class library and you pass it to an API that takes X document on desktop, it needs to work, right? If it didn't work, would you be pissed off?
Who's ever seen the error cannot cast system.blah to system.blah where blah is the same thing?
Yeah.
All right. That's type equivalency, right? This is one of the foundations of .NET. This is how we achieve that when we have .NET framework, which has been around forever, and some random new .NET thing, but they need the same type. They need to be considered the same thing.
So this package, this like actual package, system.xml, xdocument, actually the implementation for .NET 4.5 type forward to system.xml on full framework. So the problem with that is that APIs can't really version as pure IL if they're being dragged out by the actual implementation in .NET framework. So we can't actually have this beautiful new world just like that. It means that you lose some things. So today, if you go on GitHub and search for CoreFX, and you search for, there's a lot of stuff on here. This must take forever to build. X document. This, I think this is the full source code, right? Is it the full source code? Donna team, confirmation? Full source code for XML document? Yeah? Right, pure IL, right? This is just pure IL. It doesn't do any PM votes, no magic. On full framework, this actually type forwards into system.xml, as I said before. The problem with that is if we add new APIs, they won't appear on that new platform forever, right? Until .NET 4.6 blah comes out with new APIs. That holds back this API surface until desktop updates.
And to be clear, that unit of sort of revving there is the type.
Right.
So you can't just add a new method or property and have it show up on the newer platforms and not in the old platforms because the entire type is forwarded.
Right.
You can't just forward individual members.
But in theory, if you took this exact C# code, recompiled it in the class library on desktop, and you changed the name to be, I don't know, like Microsoft.blah, it would just work.
Not system.xml?
Microsoft system? Yeah, your own version of it. So you change the type name to be your own type, and you use it on full framework, it would just work.
But it's not type equivalent anymore.
The problem is you can't then pass into APIs that take X document. So you're kind of in a bind, right? So what do? Do you break compatibility, or do you type forward forever? So to make this plan actually work, we need a way to both unify to the current implementation of desktop and add new APIs.
We actually demoed something that did exactly that at the MVP Summit 2 years ago.
Right.
So I don't know if you remember when Levi in the other building, I think it was at the Hyatt or whatever, we showed a demo on the Insider Day where we loaded .NET, we loaded system.web 4.6, and this was like 3 years ago, there was no 4.6, from the bin folder. Does everyone remember that? We had a NuGet package called system.web. It had new API in it. We dropped it in the bin folder, and we ran an ASP.NET 4 application, but it was using a system.web 4.6 that we deployed by NuGet. Now, to get that to work required all godly manner of horrible things.
And it breaks a whole bunch of other things.
It breaks tooling and all that, but it's technically possible. And that type of facility is what we would need to be able to potentially
implement this type of beautiful plan.
So there are things we're exploring. And that's really where we're as close as we are right now, is we're exploring those ideas. Because this plan, we think, has a lot of really nice traits and benefits. Who would rather just reference one thing and like, oh, .NET standard library and it versions forever. It's kind of nice. Yes?
There's some feedback on your layer one, layer two. One of the things I really like is the fact that you're building that layer one and having to make it portable is going to make it much easier for us in layer two to build portable stuff.
Yeah,
correct. Because the things you depend on are portable by definition.
By nature.
You become portable. So that is the kind of ripple effect of doing this type of thing. And then as .NET introduces not just new platforms, but kind of new facets to existing platforms, which we're going to talk a little bit about later on, then you potentially just get that support for free.
For free.
So .NET just becomes more attractive over time as we add more and more great features and possibly redefine what .NET means. You don't have to do anything. You just get all that wonderful work for free.
Yep.
That's the dream anyway.
It requires some hackers to port this to like ARM, blah, 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 and this layer zero, and then you're portable across the board.
You know, the community has already expressed fantastically a desire to help us port .NET to new platforms. We had the free BSD effort, which ported the core CLI cross-platform. So this plan, in my mind, is very much in line with that type of thinking. Yep. So we have 5 minutes left. Do you want to just answer questions? Do you want to do something? Okay. Question is, can we get a copy of this document?
When I'm done. I keep
not
changing
done yet.
It. Richard gives me feedback. I just tweak it right now. Any feedback, Richard? Let's change it. Is it good? Good so far? Okay, thanks.
Good so far. I don't think we're quite done yet.
No, nowhere near done yet.
Damn it. Yeah. We're still working on it. We will share out the generations one soon, because we actually have to post it because people are asking questions, and it's kind of...
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So just to reiterate that again, there are two things we're talking about here. One is like pretty much set in stone. It's done. It's happening already. It was part of Beta 8 and RC and NuGet. That's the concept of generations. .NET Standard Library is a new thing beyond that. It fits into generation, dovetails nicely, but it is a new concept that is still very much hot. We're still working on that right now.
And there's some hard problems to solve.
And so we might end up like sharing the standard library thing on the insiders list, very NDA, and the generations thing will be very public very soon, I'm guessing. Because
right.
like, as we said, we already have packages doing this right now. We need to help people author their own packages. No.
It is.
No.
A private gist.
No.
It's secret by like...
Oh, the generation one, that's totally
public. It's public.
That's
this
totally
one's
public.
Fine.
In fact, people have found it already, I believe.
Yeah, some guy did.
There's a reason one's in a private repo and one isn't.
Yeah, this one's fine.
Any other questions?
Any questions? Does anyone understand why this is so hard to do right now? Because of all the existing stuff that people built over the last 15 years? We could break all your types by renaming them. Would you be okay with that? If we did a one-time reset where we renamed all your types and said, you know what, we're portable now.
Just imagine that everything that was system dot
you
became
just have to reboot
core
your entire
dot, for example.
World.
But from that point on, it was beautiful. Core dot was standard
library.
And we
will never mess up ever again. This
and we'd never
time.
Break it.
The
we
last
promise.
Time. We'll never break it.
It'll
game.
Support all platforms. HoloLens
Forevermore.
47 will come out and we'll support it. Maybe.
It'll just work. I promise.
All right. I don't see any hands. I think we've
Nothing.
Filled the brains with .NET. Oh, is there a hand? Someone's pointing at a hand. Now I've got two people pointing at... So just so that you know,
the
it's not
light.
That I'm ignoring you. You are immediately underneath the projector.
Can't see
so when I look up there, the contrast, I just see like black underneath it. So I'm sorry I didn't see you.
We call Miguel.
Hang on. The question is about Xamarin and how does this fit into A, generations, and B, standard library?
Yes.
Let's do generations first.
Yeah, so we need to call somebody.
We need to take Miguel out for dinner this
see
week.
See what and, they actually implement, and then fit it into one of these slots.
Pretty much.
Because it fits some slot. We just need to figure out what it fits.
Is that the documentation issue?
Yep. It's pretty mechanical. So once we figure out what maps, then we tell NuGet to update the mapping. And then we're done.
So, and for standard library,
for standard
that's a
library,
larger discussion.
It, in theory, they fit into this box over here. And once they port it,
then they could use our standard library.
Yeah.
It would work, in theory, when it exists.
So they implement the iOS version of file system and socket and whatever is on iOS and Android.
The mappings have to be encapsulated.
The statement is the mappings have to be encapsulated in the NuGet client. Today they are.
Yeah.
The plan is over time, because we want this to be open-ended,
this
that it become less hard-coded.
We totally like made this up one day.
So we kind of made up what this might look like. Imagine that there was...
Like a manifest.
Yes.
Imagine there was a manifest that was contained in a NuGet package called the .NET platform mapping or something, and then NuGet knew how to download that to figure out, okay, I've got package A that says it runs here, and package B that runs here. Do these things even work together? Well, they do because they both map in my mapping table, right? And then we could just deploy new versions of that. Right.
Yep.
Exactly. All right, 30 seconds. If you've got that one last question, you can squeeze it out right now. No one. I don't have any pull with the crowd.
Are you
going
to put your app to be .NET Core compatible? No, just put a .NET folder, follow the rules, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Good to go. Great.
If you have beef about any missing API in .NET Core, and I know plenty of you do, then yeah, by all means, please talk to the .NET team. They are right here. There's like a row here, second row up. Put your hands up, .NET people.
And the row scream at claw.
I know they will encourage you to log issues on the CoreFX repo and everything. That's all good. That's where we should have a lot of public discussion about API that should be there or shouldn't. But obviously, this is a great chance to talk to them in person. Hanselman is... You have a question, Scott. Yes.
No, of course not.
Yes, someone already questioned why are we calling them 5.1 and 5.2. Is that not confusing? Okay. Sorry, what? Okay, so there is another layer of detail here that we have perhaps in the standard library one. Oh, just ignore 5. That.
5.1.
So no, I think it was the other JSON file.
Oh.
Yeah, just ignore what you saw there. That may have probably just a typo. There is, in the standard library discussion, there certainly is a third number that comes into play, and we did touch on that briefly, but we're still figuring out those details. Effectively, things can still, like, if you go back to the other, the layer 0, layer 1, layer 2, just to touch to close on that. Layer 0 defines the generation number, like 5.5. But a specific implementation of that for a specific platform obviously may need to rev itself and have bug fixes. Bugs. So it would use that third number potentially. .NET standard library, there would be a 5.5 of that, 5.5.0, that runs anywhere 5.5 of the layer 0 is implemented. But the standard library includes this bit down here.
Packages.
These don't have any... these can rev and add new APIs amongst themselves without any new dependencies being added to layer 0. So you could have a 5.5.1, a 5.5.2, a 5.5.3, and know that 5.5x always runs on generation 5.5. And as soon as new API is required in layer 0 to add a feature in layer 1, layer 0 must rev to layer to 5.6, and hence there would be a 5.6 standard library that runs on that one. Okay. And that's it, we're done.
Yeah.
Thank you.